Welcome back to the Pete Space. I'm Cynthia Hanna with Palette Life Sciences. If you haven't already, subscribe to the Pete Space on Apple, Spotify, or Google Podcasts to be notified when a new episode is released. Palette Life Sciences, sponsor of this podcast, is committed to bringing educational tools such as the Pete Space for sharing best practices and compelling conversations across a wide variety of pediatric urology and VUR topics. The content of today's episode is solely the opinion of J.D. Boucher, quality specialist and research nurse at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas, and Beverly Kirshner, operations and compliance executive at Surgery Direct, a healthcare company focused on the advancement of ambulatory surgical care. In this episode, JD and Beverly discuss the foundations of quality metrics in healthcare in the inpatient setting and the outpatient setting. As a nurse and having worked with physicians and institutions in this arena, this topic is near and dear to my heart. Quality is the framework used to systematically improve patient care. Quality improvement seeks to standardize processes and structure to reduce variation in care, achieve predictable results, and improve outcomes for patients, healthcare systems, and organizations. Well, welcome, JD and Beverly. We're so glad to have you here. Today, we're going to be talking about quality measures for inpatient and freestanding outpatient surgery arenas. So, JD, I'm going to give you the floor.
I think what we need to do is probably define what quality measures are and what is meant by that as we lead it into our core indicators. Basically, quality measures are the standards of measuring the performance of healthcare providers to care for patients and populations. That's kind of the easiest term you could think of. Quality measures can identify important aspects of care like safety, effectiveness, timeliness, and fairness. We measure things like health outcomes and clinical processes and patient safety, effective use of healthcare resources and care coordination, patient engagement in their own care and in populations and in public health. These are things that I look at every day. But there are three primary areas that I, in my role as a quality specialist, really focus on. And there's the structural measures, which numbers that are such as how many board certified physicians or certified nurses do we have? What process measures is our second one? And things that we look at on that is what preventative measures are we doing? Like, are we doing blood sugar tests or immunization? But the biggest one that I look at in the surgical arena is outcome measure. And that's where our primary focus is on the outcomes. And we look at mortality rates and surgical site infections and CODIs and CLABSIs and falls and patient satisfaction scores. Those are really where I strive and I spend about 90% of my role in that arena. How about you, Bev?
So in the ASC industry, we're right there with you, JD. We have ours broken down just a little bit differently. We look at the patient's fitness and do they meet the criteria to be admitted to an ASC? And if they do, and we do their procedure, do they end up in an ER within 24 hours or do they end up in the hospital being admitted for reasons? And we have to track that. And that is a big quality indicator to the federal government as to whether or not we're protecting our patients by ensuring that they are in the right environment for their surgery. The other areas that we report are infection control. We do track surgical sites infections. We track them a little bit differently than inpatient. We do 100% tracking right now. Inpatient has certain types of surgeries that they're tracking. We really don't see any of the CLABSIs or any of those in an ASC because we don't put Foley's in and we don't do things like that. Our patients are in and out so quickly that generally our infection rates, if I see one infection in our surgery centers in a 12-month period, it shocks me. But that's because our patient doesn't take care of the critically ill and does not take care of the patients that have been exposed to diseases that would cause infections when they come into our environment.
With the inpatient, though, there's penalties for patients who are discharged and then returned back to the ED for an avoidable readmission. Is that correct?
There are. And, you know, that that whole reimbursement aspect is tied to this. And within that patient satisfaction portion of the survey, that HCAHPS as well, HPS impacts. And, you know, 30% of the medical payments are tied to those survey scores. But those are some of the things that we measure just for the returns. But there's also within the hospital setting itself, there are returns to the OR within a 24-hour period or within a 30-day period. Those are two different statistics that we keep. I can just name off a few. We also have on-time starts. We have surgical site infections, turnover times, length of stay. And then we also go to safety events that are tied to all these procedures like needle stick injuries and codes and lacerations or something to that aspect. And that plays a large role in their overall performance of the facility as well as the surgeon.
For those who don't know what we say HCAHPS, HCAHPS is an acronym for Hospital Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers and Systems. It's a survey that goes out to the patients. I think it's around 30% of all patients get an HCAHPS survey. And it's very much, how involved were you in your care? Did the doctor communicate in a way you can understand? Did the nurse communicate to you in a way you understand? And would you recommend this facility to others? And I think people don't understand that you can go on like the CMS.gov and you can compare different facilities for heart surgery or orthopedic surgery or whatever it is that you're looking for and see how these hospitals are ranked with each other.
There are really two types of quality indicators that both inpatient and outpatient report. One of them is what JD's been talking about. Those are outcomes that we measure and we get benchmarked against across the United States from other hospitals of like sizes or ASCs. But the other piece of quality is our performance improvement projects, which usually are many research projects and sometimes can be full-blown projects. But we look at what's coming in from our benchmark data, and then we start working as a team with our physicians and our nurses to figure out how we can do stuff better. And especially if we find a trend of things that are not as expedient as they need to be, such as our readmissions, or a patient's going to the ER, or for inpatient, it could be a number of things, returning to surgery within 24 hours. Why are they coming? Those can go into big performance improvement projects. So when you're looking at quality, you're looking at what we call quality assessment, which are benchmark indicators, and we set goals for those. But we're also looking at a performance improvement where we identify things that can be better, and we do our research and work with our teams to find better processes and to close gaps so that our patients are safer and have a more successful visit, no matter what environment they're in.
So what is the physician's role and the anesthesia's role in quality in all this? And how does that impact, you know, their fees in the hospital?
In all honesty, I like to say history has always shown that there was a time, not now, but there was a time when physicians were only there to treat the injury or the illness. And then the nurse took care of the patient's whole aspect. And I think as we're moving into a system to where the value-based purchasing is coming into play for the patient, we are now seeing that the surgeon or faculty physicians need to also focus on the entire aspect of the big picture, as I like to call it, of the patient care arena. So they are now looking at pre-procedure, they're looking at intra-op, they're looking at post-procedure, but they're also following that patient for 30 days to 2 months just to make sure that those quality measures are right. Where before they didn't watch their P's and Q's, now they are.
Well, we used to be in a pay-to-play arena, and now we're in a play-to-perform. And I think that's where, you know, the biggest shift was. Now the microscope is on, not just the patient's subjective experience, but all this data that has to be turned in on all these different metrics. They have to be positive because those outcomes mean everything in this. If you want to get paid, you need to perform at a quality level.
Yes, because as physicians are moving into patient-centered care, a focus is being increased on the understanding and the involvement of the patients in the care process. Mm-hmm. And that likely will strengthen the relationship between the surgical outcomes and the patient satisfaction. You know, no longer is the word the surgeon says what the surgeon says is the final say-so. The patients are reviewing the surgeons now and their scores, which are available to them. They're looking at the whole process from start to end. Pre-procedural appointments, labs, x-rays, tests, these are all part of the financial associations that are being looked at from that patient. And the nurse's role is even being evaluated in this process too. So patients are wanting to be treated with respect, with compassion, and they're looking at this where they're going to put these scores down.
So in the ASC environment, we also do patient satisfaction, but we also work beside our physicians, understanding that they have quality indicators that they are required to report throughout the year, just like the ASC and the inpatient. And some of those, like an anesthesia, is the patient coming out intubated? Is the patient coming out with an oral airway? Is there a tremendous amount of nausea and vomiting, or did the anesthesiologist do a good assessment and gave prophylactic medicine to keep these patients from being very sick and having a prolonged recovery? I think the other thing that the surgeons are looking at too is their SSI rates. We track those with them. We give them the data, and they work side by side with us when we are looking at our quality, and they are participating in our quality committees inside our ASCs. And I think that that is where we're really going to see a big difference in patient care and patient satisfaction. And I think, too, as our physicians get more and more used to being more a part of the team and not just the one determining care, but actually participating in the care in a way they never have, we're going to see more and more satisfaction with our physicians working with the nurses and the nurses working with the physicians. We're also going to see higher family satisfaction scores, because in this HCAHPS and in the ASC quality measures on patient satisfaction, we're also asking if the family understood what was going on, were they communicated with, were they a part of the care team? So it is expanding all the way through, not only through the physicians, but it's expanding through that whole family unit. And in ASCs, we work really hard to keep our patients and our family members that they bring with them together. Now, COVID has given us a little bit of a challenge where we have not really allowed family members in our facilities. They have had to wait in special waiting areas, and they could only bring one person, which kind of defeated what the federal government was looking for in bringing this team together. It is really refreshing to know that this is changing today, that we're actually beginning to go back to normal and be able to have family members more active in the care with them in our environments.
Yes, as a matter of fact, Parkland has now opened up their visiting hours, that they extended them from what they were. And before, we were only allowing one family member to enter the hospital, and we've increased those numbers. Fortunately, this has given, especially in the surgical setting where I live, as this has given that patient less anxiety because they have that family structure there with them. Also, as they are recovering from procedures, they also have that backup from that family as far as education, and we can educate the family as well as the patient before they leave. And I think that's a very big benefit that we can have with the patient outcome. So it's been a really positive step coming back into, I like to say, normal terms, but this has been a, to see an increase in the scores. Fortunately, we are able to see those scores.
JD, I think another thing that all of us have learned, and you guys in inpatient certainly shared this with those of us in freestanding surgery centers, and that's the way the patient satisfaction survey is written, that we needed to change how we communicated to patients so that when they read their patient satisfaction surveys or when somebody read them to them, it was not unfamiliar language and that we were all using the same vocabulary so that the patients understood what was being asked of them. And I think that that was a big learning curve when we first started in on measuring patient satisfaction.
At my facility, we have a literacy review on all of our surveys now and brought it down to a second grade reading level. And this is better for our patient population to understand. And when we translated it to four different dialects of Spanish. We have seen that this has also given a greater understanding for that patient population to be able to go through the survey. Because as surveys are sent out between 5 and 30 days, there's four different ways that we do it. You know, you could do it through a phone call or through a paper survey or even on computer. And we want to make sure that the patient population is understanding the survey questions and the questionnaire that is given to them.
Exactly. And I think post-discharge is also a place that I found when I worked in the hospital, that, you know, the post-discharge with having the family there so that the patient has another set of ears to understand, you know, what it is, their expectations and what they need to do when they get home so they indeed don't end up back in the ED or back admitted into the hospital. So I think those conversations and the setting of the expectations, you know, with patients and family members and is so important to just the basic understanding.
Well, and I think that that starts in the physician's office. I think our physicians and their staff really are the ones that should start that education process. But I think we need to do it as a team so that those of us in inpatient and in ambulatory surgery centers know what this physician is expecting of their patients at home. How do they change their dressings? When do they change their dressings? What are the signs and symptoms that they want to hear about immediately? So it is a joint venture, and for the physicians who are listening to this, they are key and critical to our patients' recovery and our patients' care. And we depend on them as nurses to help us navigate what they're expecting and help our patients navigate what their physician is expecting so that the outcomes are positive and our patients can come back and do things that they may have not been able to do for a long time, especially if you're looking at the elderly patient who needs a total joint and they haven't been able to walk. If we educate them well enough, they go home in 6 hours or less now after surgery, unheard of years ago. And we're looking at more and more things where our technology has improved so much that we can get them out the door. But the key to getting them home and successfully home and safe is totally education.
I think that there's going to be a summarization on this. The one thing that we want to think about when we're thinking about quality measures is that when we're increasing the amounts of credible and actionable information that we get from these, this is when we're able to get that information from the public reporting efforts, spurring improvement to hospitals and systems and to improve the quality, safety, and compliance and the quality measures they focus on during this, and does this reduce the hospital-acquired infection rates and actions like this that show us that quality measurements and quality specialists like myself, it's very imperative for hospitals to continue and to strive for better performances. So as hospitals continue to look for ways to advance quality of care at a whole lowering the cost of the role, the quality, safety, and compliance is becoming more and more important for the success of hospital systems worldwide.
Very much so, JD. I agree with you totally. And I think that it's the main message here is it's essential that we track our patient outcomes and understand what's going on. It's essential that we educate our patients appropriately to their language and their language skills so that they have the opportunity to participate in their care and to be safe at home. So I really appreciate the fact that we are turning into a team. And I'm just going to mention that JD and I both believe in this so much that we are back in school getting masters in quality, risk management, and compliance for healthcare and nursing so that we can help others lead the charge to keep our patients safe and have positive outcomes.
Well, I am so appreciative for both of you to be here today and to have this conversation. There's so much around quality and patient satisfaction. I mean, we could go on for days, but I agree with you guys. The team approach, I think, is the best approach. And thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for joining us this week on the Pete Space. Please share this episode with your colleagues while we deliver more pediatric urology-focused content in the coming weeks. For more educational content and upcoming webinars, please visit the Deflux Learning Center on deflux.com. Additionally, you can learn more about our company and our products at palatelifesciences.com. Thank you.